My friend, your role as a father is critical. You are so important. Three nuggets that hit me from my conversation with Stephen today are: one, men lead men into manhood. Two, you have what it takes to call and lead your son, your boy, into manhood. And three, manhood is a matter of the heart. Welcome to Fatherhood Field Notes Podcast, where I interview incredible fathers, gaining wisdom from their stories for you and I to grow in our craft. I'm your guide, Ned Schaut, father to five kiddos, currently ages 11 to 17, and husband to my rad wife, Sarah, working on our 20th year of marriage. I'm in the thick of it, and I am working daily to rebel against the low expectations for fathers and create a world where fathers truly know who they are as they show up for their families. You and I have the greatest opportunity to impact our world through the way we embrace our fatherhood role. This episode is brought to you by The Adventure of Fatherhood, helping men discover their powerful fatherhood role and build their fatherhood skills. The role of the father is to serve, guide, provide, protect, and of course, find joy and have fun in the messiness of it all. Today's guest is my friend, Stephen Meeks. I learned so much during our conversation. Enjoy meeting Stephen. Oh my goodness, you guys, I'm super pumped to be meeting my friend Stephen Meeks for the second time, talking fatherhood, talking rites of passage. Stephen, thank you so much for being here. How are you today?
Well, thank you. And so happy to be here and visit with you and see where the Lord takes us today.
Yeah, so good. All right, here's my first question for you. How old do you find yourself today?
In my body, I'm 65. In my mind, I'm about 30.
Okay, love it. And then how many years have you been married?
42.
42. Man, that's one of the best gifts you can give the world. Like for me, I just turned 40 and I think, wow, 40 years old. But then to go 42 years of being married, that's remarkable. So if you were to say to the 40-year-old one thing, I'm coming up on 20 years, so I'm halfway there. What would you say to the 40-year-old who may be listening to this?
I'd have a lot to say to him, but let me summarize it by saying, listen to her. She is a gift and she is mirroring to you things that you need to know that reflect about you and God's relationship. Sometimes between you and her, but really she's mirroring something about you and the Father that you need to pay attention to.
Love it. So listen and then pay attention to what she's mirroring to you. How many kiddos do you have?
Five. I have four boys and a daughter in the middle, and all of my kids are grown. The youngest is 23, and the oldest is soon turned 40, your age.
That's epic. And how many grandkids do you have?
We have 13 that has already gone on, and we have two more on the way this year, sometime late in the summer.
So that'll put you at 15 grandkids.
Yeah, that's right.
So I have four daughters and a son, flip-flop with you, but we've been talking like, what's the potential for how many grandkids I'll have? So the podcast is a fatherhood podcast, but I think that we've missed the opportunity somewhat in our culture to understand that a grandfather is still a father in a different capacity, right? So what would you say as being a grandfather to 12 now that you have found is critical that you'd want us 40-year-olds who it's like, my oldest is turning 18 next week. This is a great example. My daughter's turning 18. She's my baby, my firstborn. There's these feelings of like life is changing and our house isn't going to be the same in a year because she'll be moved out and life is over, right? It's not. But my question to you is, if I had this vision of one day she's going to have 3 to 5 kids that I'm going to be a grandfather to, tell me a little bit about your perspective of the grandfather role.
It has evolved. When I was your age, I wasn't thinking much about being a granddad, but of course, I've had that opportunity more. And I'm a counselor. And so I've been working with people and looking back in their story back a couple of generations. And I saw it was an pivotal thing. I saw that how important grandparents were to people's lives, not their children's lives, their own children's lives, but actually in the lives of their grandchildren. Mm. The grandparents doing one thing, and I'll tell you what it is. The grandparents doing one thing created something that is very powerful. So grandparents need to be on the job here. Kids picked up the values of a grandparent. One thing, and that is they showed delight in that kid. When they brightened up, when the kid, well, hey, good to see you. So glad you're here. They look them in the face. They look them in the eyes and they delight. They brighten up. Or grandmother, I had one lady tell me one time, when I went to grandmother, she always made me cookies. That young woman that I was talking to felt special. She felt delighted in. She's making these for me. I had boys a lot of times tell me, my granddad would take me fishing. We'd go on the mountains or into the workshop or just on rides with him in the truck. And it wasn't so much what they did, but granddad chose me or grand mother owes me. And they delighted in their eyes or in their words. And those kids, they picked up the values, sometimes the very same occupations or similar occupations that the grandparents did. And even the faith, if they had faith, yeah. they picked it up. Conversely, if granddad was a renegade and granddad was a drinker or really into a lot of bad things, then the grandson who he delighted in would tend to want to be just like granddad.
Mm.
So the values are chosen or picked up, I should say, through grandparents showing delight, inclusion, and that kind of thing. So that's what I'm learning to do. So I'm putting a lot of emphasis in showing every one of my grandchildren, boys and girls, delight.
Delight. Okay. Something came up for me when you're sharing this, and I would just love to get your perspective, right? Having five kids and having a relationship with your five kids. Were there any, or could there, should there have been any conversations between you and your kids and expectations around you showing up as a grandfather? I don't know if anybody thinks about that or talks about that. Do you find that necessary at all? Yeah. What do you think?
I didn't know my grandfathers. I knew one until I was about 11, so I don't remember him much. But now that I am granddad, I've learned these things. I've been talking to my kids now as they're adults and they have children, and I've been encouraging them to show delight in their kids now, because it also works with parents. And of course, by modeling or by exampling, I'm giving them some path for their future as grandparents. And my wife's doing the same for, of course, our daughters-in-law about how to be grandmothers. I don't know if that answers the question exactly, but that's what I'm into. I'm trying to be an example, and I'm encouraging them to pick up this same tool of delight and apply that now with their kids.
Love it. I'm asking you a couple just more random questions. Where do you live?
I'm in Tennessee, Cumberland Plateau. It's part of the Smoky Mountain Range, just an hour or so from Knoxville.
Okay, nice. And then what is it that you do to provide value in the world at this stage of life?
Oh, probably one of the two things that I'm involved in. One is counseling, just private counseling. And that's really a blessing to me, as well as to the people that I work with, because I see people freed from problems and issues that burden them or hinder them. Counseling is one. And the other thing is working with men, spending more time with fathers, with men and their sons, and helping them transition their boys from being boys to being men, which is becoming more my emphasis and passion as well, because we did it. We learned how to do it, or I learned how to do it with my sons by guesswork and had a few clues, but we found something that has really been beneficial for us, my sons and I, even my son-in-law and I, and other men that we've started to help with this. So I'm moving in that direction now.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So I read your book, Save the Boys, and that's what we're going to get into talking about in just a few minutes here. I'm going to ask you a few more questions. But yes, I love that we get to take from your experience and what you learned and take that. So I'm excited to talk about that. But let me ask a couple last questions for you. At 65 years old, you've lived life. You had five kids. You've got 12 grandkids. You've been married 42 years. So you've been in it. One thing that I had a realization about recently is, I don't want to say arriving at 40, but it's okay. I'm set in. To I know who I am in a sense. My question to you is, through those different stages, where is a place that you were stuck in your ways, maybe, but you shifted out of that? Like, was there anything that you were black and white on? And then through living life, you're like, actually, I had to shift in my thought, belief, or perception of this. Does anything come to mind for you?
Since that time, around 20, I've been in a series of shifts. I grew up very legalistic, pretty rigid. And over time, grace has become more important to me as I've come to see and know the person of Jesus. But as a person, not a script or not a doctrine carrier or some stiff checklist of things, but really as a friend. And as my relationship, my true friendship with him has matured, I found myself more gracious, but still more firmly seated in what is right and what is wrong, but merciful with the right and the wrong, because he was. So I've been shifting along the way. And the number one area, and I still need some more shifts, but the one is big, has been with my wife. Men's wives are really there to help refine us, to mature us, and to make us better. And we don't like it, or at least I don't always like it or enjoy it. And a lot of times I don't think I need it, but then I come around understanding I do need improving and sometimes just changing. So my wife has been a real benefit to me, and I'm just beginning to begin to value and appreciate her as I probably should have, or I know I should have, since we were first married 42 years ago.
Yeah, it's that continuous process, progress. That relationship is so key, so important. Okay, I want to jump into the book. Now, the question that I typically ask my guests is, the podcast is called Fatherhood Field Notes. The mantra is rebel and create. And I'll typically ask, what's something you're rebelling against and what do you hope to create from that? Now, you can answer that question if you would like, but then I've got some questions about the book, just to dig in to help men understand their opportunity to create a rite of passage for their sons. So would you like to answer the Rebel and Create question around the book, or has something else come up for you that you would like to share before we jump into the book?
I want to answer that question.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, I think it's a good question. I like it. And I am doing this in a quiet way, but I'm rebelling against extended adolescence. Mm. Our boys are stuck until they're in their 20s or older and not becoming men. And that is pitiful. That's a good old-fashioned term. It's a bad thing. And so I'm also rebelling against fathers not taking fatherhood dead serious. Oh, powerful. And whether or not they value that, they will affect their kids, not just their sons, but they will affect their kids for good or for bad.
Yeah.
So they need to be intentional about it. And so there are a few things. We've lost a lot of things. I think it has been passed on to us because we're not the first generation of men in this country who have not been intentional enough, have not gained from our father's tools and advice and knowledge. And I'd like to see that turned around. I'd like to see us reestablish some confidence in good things, knowing that we know what we're doing as fathers in leading our boys with confidence and conviction. This is not pride. I don't want to cry. Humility is something we should be confident in, but humility is not being timid. Humility is standing in the right position before God and then leading people based on that right understanding or the right position. Those kinds of definitions and those kinds of things, I want to see our guys get them back, and other men are bringing things to the table to help with that. And I want dads to move their sons into manhood firmly, confident. I want them to be able to put a date on the calendar. This is the day it happened.
Okay. So, man, I read the book and I love it. And shout out to Marcus as well. So you work with Marcus and the book is beautiful, right? So I think just right out the gate, dudes who are listening to this, you need to get a copy of this. The book's beautiful. And what I also loved is as I read it, there's a lot of space for me. Like I wrote a bunch of notes, inspiration things that I want to do and connect with my son. So really powerful. Couple key things I have to point out. And then I want to ask you about things. One is underlining here that manhood is a matter of the heart. It's not about, am I a male? But we're talking about the heart. So I guess I'll pause on each of these. Talk to me about that. Manhood is a matter of the heart.
That's where it really happens. It is a male, but not all males are men, and not all 40-year-olds are men. There are some 40-year-old boys. And I hope it stings a little bit if it fits, because it needs to motivate guys to not do that. It should sting if we're being a boy at 40. But there are some boys that are in their early teens who are actually men at heart. It is a matter of heart.
Okay, so let me back up here for a second because you just gave me chills. First off, this book is called Save the Boys, and it's a book about manabouts, which, Stephen, I want you to tell us what that is. But hear this right now, men. On that same page 23 where it says manhood is a matter of the heart, Stephen just makes this great point right now. There are boys who are 16, 17 who are operating with a healthy man psychology, and then there's 40-year-old men who are still operating as boys. So let me give you a couple of keys that Stephen says in here. One is a boy psychology seeks acknowledgement. A boy psychology, I want it all for me. Power is for my benefit. I'm the center of the universe. I'm immortal. I take no responsibility. I love this one. And I said, wow, in my book, I said, I want a mother. Whereas you go on the healthy man psychology, I seek that which I believe. I share with my community. Power is for the good of all. I am just part of the universe. I know I'm mortal. I take full responsibility of my actions, and I want relationship with a woman. So you had the flip of each one. And I think when you hear those men, you might have a little check in yourself to go, okay, a couple of those, I still operate as a boy sometimes.
That's right. And we've got to change that. If I could boil all of that down to condense that, because it's a lot, I tried to define boyhood versus manhood very succinctly so we won't forget it. So men are givers, boys are takers. And that's where it is. And of course, that's the example that Jesus left us. He was a servant, not a self-seeker. So boys seek their own things. It's me, and men, it's others. They're very attentive to other people, not just family, but just other people. They value life. They value people's things. They value others, and they're attentive to those. They take action on those versus it's all about me and everybody giving to me or satisfying me and that kind of thing.
Oh, beautiful. So Stephen, take me back to you on your first trip. What was the conviction in you? About what age were you when you're like, my son needs to do a rite of passage? And so you stumble through that first one in a sense. I don't want to call it stumbling, but you just did it. And then you did it for all four of your sons. So take me back to that. Why were you convicted that you needed to do this in the first place?
When I was in my mid-30s, maybe late 36, 37, somewhere in there, I saw that my first son was moving towards the teen years. And really, the thing I was after in the beginning, that he would make a commitment somehow to be sexually pure, control himself. I saw the ramifications of not being chaste, and I didn't want my son to move into that. So that was the one thing that I was trying to think, how can I help him go through his teen years and make it? And someone mentioned to me at the same time this beautiful place in the wilderness up in Minnesota. And I thought, maybe we'll go there and get away and have some man time. That's really my thought. That was all it was going to be. But when we went, it came quite a bit more. And the subsequent boy afterwards did. And I would say later on, one of the things I'm rebelling against, my daughter came along and I saw her growing up. I thought, she needs a great man. And there are not many. There are not enough. And the ones that I see who are good guys, in fact, I told my daughter, don't go for a good guy. You look for a great man. That's who you want to date. Not a good guy. Good guys are bad news. Okay. And I told my daughter, I know what boys or like, because I was one. And I'm telling you, you got to really be careful. And I want to help you with that. But I decided also that for my granddaughters, I want to build some great men. I saw so many college girls coming here to our home and ministry and working with us who were just in their early 20s, mid 20s, late 30s, and they could not find a guy that they said, I can give my heart to. I would describe a great man. And they said, Mr. Meeks, we don't know one like that. And these girls were coming from Christian campuses. And they said, we don't know one like what you're describing. So I thought, I'm going to make some because I know what we did that made four and then some more. I said, that's what we're going to do. But it started with just that trip with my son. And then by God's grace, it developed. And I'd been in East Africa. I didn't mention that yet. Mm-mm. I was living in East Africa at the time, working the tribal group. And I saw their boys. This particular tribal group took their sons out for a month every year in December for a special time away with the men to indoctrinate them, to teach them, equip them to come back into the society, into the community, in the tribe, and be aware of what a man should do or not do. And so they secluded, they took time to do that. When those young guys came out, they were in their teens. When they came out, I tell you, Ned, they held themselves differently. They looked different. They were different on the inside, and you could see it in something about the way they carried themselves and behaved. They had been changed in a few days. And I thought, I don't know what they're teaching them, and I don't know if I would teach my son all the things they taught theirs, but there's something about that pattern that worked.
Fathers, quick interruption here. Do you struggle with the sense that you are not stepping into the fullness of your role as a father? Do you regularly wrestle with feeling inadequate as a father? I would love to connect and encourage you over a one-on-one Zoom call. You can grab a time with me at www.rebelandcreate.com/connect. Take a few minutes to talk life, fatherhood, and I will share several resources that will support you on your adventure of fatherhood. Now, back to the conversation. What do you think that key is? So I got a couple of thoughts here, questions, but what is that key? Because it's not go have sex, go get drunk, go whatever, go take. It's not go take. It's somehow unlocking that you have something to give, right? Because every man wants to give. So can you unpack that anymore? Like when you've done this with your kids and when you talk about this with men, what is that thing that in a couple of days I could come back having a deeper understanding of myself?
It starts with being invited. When men lead men into manhood. And so when the community of men or the fathers, but the fathers, grandfathers, whatever, the men of the community invite these boys, come away with us to become a man. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right. Try to remember when you were 10, 12, 15 years old and somebody invited you to come join their team, football team, baseball team, what a club, whatever it was. If you're given a special invitation, come be with us. It makes you feel honored and worthy. Yeah. And you don't want to let them down. You want to move into that. If it's a group you admire. So how much more when the men say, hey, I mean, when you're 13, you want to be a man. You're 15, you want to be considered a man. So when somebody says, hey, come with us, we will lead you there. We want you to be part of us. Leave the boys, whatever that is, become one of us. And if it's done rightly, I tell you, that's powerful. And guys will go to, if they trust the men that they're going to do them no harm and they really know what they're talking about, then boys will come. And I see they come with an open mind and open heart. It's beautiful. We miss that opportunity because we don't have in our culture that vehicle or that process. And so that's what Save the Boys is about, of course, is a process.
Yeah, I like it because it's a process. It's not telling you what to do exactly. And there's options and ideas and things like that, but it's giving you the breakdown of the process so that you can do what's right for you and your son, but make sure to hit these marks. Now, I would like to go back to something you said, because I think in our current culture, it can be a trigger point for us because we're so watered down. But you said, I did it originally because I wanted my son to be sexually pure. And I think sometimes we can like tune out to that because every show, everything's like, they're going to have sex or whatever, just that is what it is. But here's something else that you said, and I want men to have this part sink into them, is I want him to be able to control himself. And so when you're 15 years old, do I understand that as I'm becoming a man and I want to be a giver and not a taker, am I learning to control myself because of the man that I was created to be, because the leader I want to be? And what I want to ask men right now is, look at our current world. Is it working? Is this idea of porn everywhere, every movie has this in it, all this stuff is out there and our kids are going to do this and people don't have to control themselves. Is it working? We have freaking overweight people. We have divorce rampant. We have family and marriage all breaking down. And I would say, if you could take every one of these major issues and come back to, is can a man control himself? And so your opportunity to teach your son that, yes, you have this urge, but just because I have this urge doesn't mean that I take action on it, because there's something bigger that I'm called to and you have what it takes. You are strong. So you can have a response to that, but the control himself really stuck out to me as some gold that you shared.
Yeah. And Timothy and Titus, Paul writes to those two young men, and they might have been in their 30s, but anyway, they're younger than him. And he talks about self-control a lot. Self-control is key. If a man doesn't control himself, he will try to control everything around him. If he controls himself, he doesn't need to control everything around him. He's going to respond rightly according to whatever is going on. And so men need to be able to control themselves, their urges, their emotions, their thoughts. And when they do, they're at peace with themselves. There's a strength in that, a very confident kind of strength that is very good. And it keeps them calm. It keeps them from going off the wall crazy with things. And it keeps them steady. Maybe that's the word, instead of calm. It keeps them steady.
Which makes you trustworthy. And I think, and if you're trustworthy, then you're respected. If I walk into a room and the teenage girls trust Ned, they trust my son Brody. I'm saying if I was in high school. If you are trusted because you're steady and you're consistent and you're self-controlled, then you become that man that you're using your power in a way that's impacting the world in a positive way. And if we look around, that's not the majority. There's a movement of men who are stepping into their identity. But the only way that's going to continue to happen is if men understand your concepts. And you've said it, men lead men into manhood. So we have to lead our boys into manhood. Let me ask you this, for the guy who's, you read those boy psychology things and I'm not self-controlled myself, how am I going to lead my son if I'm not even leading myself? What would you say to that guy who's thinking that right now?
To him, you can control yourself. You can. You may not be, but you can. And you don't give up for your son's sake. You say, because I'm not controlled is not a reason and not an excuse for me to, well, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to lead him. It's because your son is so important, because you are his father, that you decide, I'm going to get serious about myself. And as a counselor, I know there are roots behind all of this. So it's a little complicated for this conversation. But I would say to those guys, look, don't just toss in the towel, because there are no perfect fathers. Okay. I'm not one. I'm not going to be one. There are no perfect dads. There are just dads who are decided that they're going to do their best to be dad to their kids. And I think, though you're not perfect, you may not be self-controlled, you can go to your son right now. He's old enough to understand. You can go to him right now and say, son, I tell you what, and this is my prescription. This is what I would say to every dad that's listening. You go to your son this evening, as soon as you see him, you say, son, I want to talk to you. And you sit him down, you say, look, I love you with all my heart. And I want you to grow up to be a great man, self-control and esteem in the right ways. I have not been a perfect example, but I'm going to try better for your sake and for my sake. And let's start praying together. And you ask God to help daddy to turn this around, and I'll be working on it as well for you. Let's work together on this. What do you say, son? First of all, now you got buy-in because you got accountability. So that you helped yourself with a little more than normal. And you took it to the father, and that's the right place to go with it. And he sees you as real. Do not pretend, because he will know the difference. hurts. He knows you fake it now. So don't pretend. Be honest. That might be shocking to him to be brutally honest. But what an example. So when he fails, he doesn't have the shame of having to hide his failures from people or from you or from others, but he'll come to you. Let me give an example. This is so powerful to be honest and candid. It doesn't mean you tell your kids every gory detail of your past. You could hurt them telling you too much.
Yeah.
But being honest about your heart. One of my sons, and so I'm not going to say which one, but one of my sons came to me after these trips, a few years after these trips, came to me. I was on the porch and he walked up on the porch beside me and reading or something. And he walks up beside me and kneels down beside me. And as he starts to kneel down beside me, I saw a tear hit the porch and just splat. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you see teardrops that are big puddles. Literally, that was a couple of drops hit and they were big. I thought, what is going on? Is he hurt? So I turned to him and he knelt down. He had his head down. He was crying, heavily sobbing. He said, Dad, I'm so ashamed. So I'm alerted. What's going on?
Yeah.
He said, Dad, I have been on a porn site. I feel so bad. I don't want to be this man. So I turned to him and I held him. He's taller than me at this point, as big as I am, I should say. And I held him and I said, I'm with you and we will get you through this. Thank you for coming to tell me this. It took a real man to do that. I'm proud of you. Now that opened the avenue for him to share his heart. And together we worked on that and he gained victory and has had a complete victory. It took some work. I mean, that's a difficult thing, but he took some work and he did the right things. And it built his heart. Our relationship is good. But what I'm saying is that when you go to a boy and you're candid about things, you're honest about your heart towards him, then he can come back to you one day and be honest about his heart to you. It's what you want. And then hiding that stuff or feeling shameful, but not dare bring it to you because he doesn't want to look bad or something, or you might not receive it well. So being candid, telling I'm not perfect, but I really want to do better at this and I'm going to try and let's pray together and let's work at it. Well, that's a beautiful blessing to bring to your kid.
Yeah, so powerful. And it leads me to one of the things I wanted to bring up was on page 116 of the book, you said you make three promises to the boy. I mean, it could be, and just I'll say these and then you can tell me the context or whatever, but ultimately you're creating that relationship of trust. But one is I won't embarrass you. Two, I'll tell you the truth. And three, I like this one a lot, I will find the answer if I don't have it. Clearly those things play into a role where your son feels comfortable as a man to come and talk to you on the porch. Talk to me about those. Why were those three promises important to you and anything else that comes to mind around them?
Yeah, when we went on the trip, I told the guys, I didn't tell them any details. There's some secrecy there that's on purpose, that's for a purpose. And so we went in and they're relying on me, looking to me to guide the thing because I didn't give them details. But they needed some assurance that this was safe. First of all, physically, is it safe? We're in a new surrounding. Secondly, what's Dad going to be doing? Can I talk about sex? Can I talk about girls? My questions. And when they're 13 or 18 or whatever they are, but they have questions. There are things that I'm not sure. I've never talked to my dad about this stuff. And does he know that stuff? And so you want to make a safe approach. And so when I said, you can trust me and I'll tell you the truth. And if I don't know the answers, I'll help you go find them because I'm for you. Then you're on the same team. He's safe with you because you're for him, not against him. And you're not going to embarrass him. I think that's a big deal, especially the younger guy is or more in the adolescent time that he is. He's really got an identity developing and he's insecure in that identity maybe. And he doesn't want to be humiliated. And it's a big risk to go in there and not know that it's safe territory. And you just let him know, no, this is safe. I'm safe.
Yeah. Stephen, what's one of your favorite stories to share about the rites of passage? Because you've had four of these experiences. What's one of your favorite stories over the years that you would share with a man to get him excited about doing this for and with his son?
Man, they were good. My sons and I still talk about those things. Great. But it's hard to choose one. But I would say with every experience, there was something that happened unscheduled. And in that was the golden nugget. Every time it was something that I didn't know or didn't plan for, but it happened. And how I handled it or how we handled it in the moment was what really drew the two of us together. It bonded us in a very special way because it's our story. And it also, they gained something I wouldn't have known how to give it to them. For example, my first son, the boat was overloaded. It was a canoe and I didn't know how to canoe. I'd never been in one. I thought it can't be that hard. And it really wasn't, but it does feel like you're in a bowl about to flip over any minute. We're out in open water and boats are going by and making waves and I'm just trying to be calm. It was hard. And I was overloaded and I didn't know I was overloaded. We had about 3 inches or 4 inches of clearance between the water and water coming in. And we got in a storm with him and navigating that storm together, communicating when I had leaned to the left or to the right or stop or go with that. We got through it and we just celebrated. And one of my sons, and we went to the same place every time. Each boy, we go to the same place. We repeat the same things. For us, it's a tradition, our rite of passage, our tradition. And we hold the secrets and we're passing it on to our grandkids, and they hope to bond us together as a clan, as a people. Abraham, cool. And every man is the father of his own nation, by the way. You're fathering a nation of people. I am too. And so I want to lead them well. My second son, Caleb, and I went out, had a nice, uneventful paddle out to the first campsite, and I was exhausted. It's about 24-hour drive, and then it's a 6 or 8 hour paddle and all that. Finally, we're at our destination. I'm in the tent, laid down, and Caleb says, "Dad, can I fish?" I said, "Sure." So he goes to the edge of the water there, this beautiful lake, and casts a few times, and sure enough, he gets a strike right off the bat. So that kind of energized me as well, because I thought, wow, they're biting. Let's go. And so we got in the canoe, and we paddled out around a little island about 200 yards from our campsite, around a little island, and there's a waterfall there. It's a pretty significant waterfall, and it's falling down, and then it's pushing, of course, a current out from the waterfall toward this small island. And we were going sideways to the water, the current, which was fine because we're fishing, but we were novice in this canoe. And there was a bluff or a cliff. It's a stone cliff straight up, probably 40 feet straight up out of the water. And we're moving into it. So I said, "Caleb, take your paddle and just give it a push us off away from the rock." I was just thinking a gentle nudge back away from. But he put his paddle up there, and he's 13 years old. He puts it up there, and all 13-year-old boys are supercharged with much energy. And he gives a push, a really quick one. I wasn't ready for that. And the boat went this way, and then I overreacted the other way, and then upside down. And we are upside down, cold. We were in northern Minnesota. Squeezes the wind.
Yeah.
I'm under the water, and the canoe is upside down, and my son is over there. And Ned, I don't know how I did this. Somehow, still underwater in probably 30, 40 feet of water. I'm underwater. I looked to my right where my son was. I saw his yellow life vest. I grabbed it, and I threw him one-handed up on top of the canoe. Now, I'm still underwater. I don't know how the energy to do.
Yeah.
I threw him up there, and then I came up and get a breath. And then the oars were floating, so we grabbed a couple of those, and we kicked and we pushed the canoe up to the edge of the island, got where we could stand up, turn it over, collected a few things that were floating. We lost some things. We got back in, and then we went back to the camp. By the time we got to the camp, we were just shivering with cold because of near hypothermic conditions. When we finally got dry clothes, got in our sleeping bags, warming up a little bit, this is the point. Caleb said to me, "Dad, I didn't know you were so strong."
And win for dad.
Yeah, win for dad. And from that point on, my son Caleb looked to me in a different way. I had power, not just physical power, but I have abilities that he did not know.
Right.
And so he would listen to me. I didn't plan that. It's a great memory in that we got out alive. So that's good.
The power in going out of your daily routine that your son could see you in a different light to create some opportunity where there's potential for you also to be uncomfortable. So I think that's great. Like you said twice in the scenarios that you were a novice at certain components of this. And I think what a gift also, because I think dads could find it fearful to go do something that they don't know. But when you learn something alongside another man, and that's how you're trying to help him see himself, there's power in that. So you think about how did you get good at something, right? You were in your 20s or late teens, early 20s, and you were doing something with a peer that was your friend. And like you said, it's the unplanned moments and stories that shape the friendship. You've said it a couple of times, the secrets, the things that knit us together that no one else could have experienced or understand because they weren't there. So I think the idea of also doing something that you're uncomfortable with, going backpacking, going canoe camping, going fishing, whatever, without an expectation of you're going to do it right. And I do think that's an area where I can sometimes find myself like, I don't know why. And maybe it's just me, but I feel like our culture of men don't want to look stupid anymore. Like, it's weird. So it holds us back from wanting to learn something because we don't want to look like we don't know. But any thoughts come up for you in that?
Yeah, you really said an important thing there. I want to address it because it's been brought to my attention in the past that men hear about this and they think, I can't do it. I'm not good enough. I don't know enough. It takes more than what I've got. I have flaws. I'm right. Not an outdoors person or whatever they think that it has to be like. And so they disqualify themselves. And I'm going to tell you, number one, you are the most qualified person to do this because you are the father. That's number one. You are the person to do this. And two, God will help you with it. But what you bring to the table is not perfection. It's direction. You don't come in there, I'm perfect. You come in there, son, I love you. I want to help you. And I don't know how to do this very well, but I'm going to do my best for you. We'll go together more than he does. That's for sure. And so bring to him what he doesn't have. And you can do that. And if some things you don't know, what a great example to say, son, I don't know how to do this. This is new for me. And let him see how you handle new things or unknown things. Do you get mad and angry? Or do you give up and run away? Or do you say, I'll learn and I'll try and I'll get advice and I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So that's a great tool for him right there.
Yeah.
That if he had it all figured out, he wouldn't get the tool. So I want to tell dad, you can do this. You're the one to do this. With God's help, you can do this. And the fact that you don't know everything is not a negative. Just it's the attitude of direction. I'm trying to do it. And just the fact you show up and give it a shot will mean so much. That may be really, in the end, all he needs, to be honest.
My friends, sorry for this quick interruption. However, somewhat sadly, I get more questions from dudes about fitness than I do about fatherhood. But what I've found is that the fathers who start taking care of their fitness and nutrition end up finding fatherhood, marriage, work, and all other aspects of life come into a deeper clarity of purpose, enjoyment, and fulfillment. Now, I've partnered with Rise Up Kings to launch Ruck Fitness, a transformative program that is less focused on a six-pack in 90 days and more focused on you creating the habits, mindset, and lifestyle that will allow you to be a healthy asset to your family for decades. Come join me in a transformative journey to become the man you want to see in the mirror. Go check it out, www.rebelandcreate.com/fitness. Now back to the show. So, Stephen, we have a few minutes left, and I have a final question for you. But before I get to that, anything from the book that you would really want guys to, or even just thinking about rites of passage, anything you'd want to share with the dad around rites of passages, anything you'd want him to walk away knowing so that he could go set this up himself with his kid?
I would say one thing to single moms, a mother whose dad is not engaged or won't engage with the boy. I want to give them a little encouragement. Though you can't lead this, you can help your son locate a safe man who can lead him on this. They can invite him into manhood and can lead him through this. I know it can be discouraging to think, I'm not a man. If it takes a man to lead a boy, then what am I going to do with my son? He's not doomed, is the message I want you to hear. It's that you find safe, godly men who can do this with him and for him. I've done it. A lady came to me who had a 14-year-old and dad is not around. And she said, can you help my son? And so I went with some other, there was a group of us for safety's sake and everything. And we did. And it was great. It was great for him. It was great for us.
So just real quick on that point, dudes who are listening to this who maybe have a daughter or who have sons, but there's also some neighborhood boys, or you have a nephew, or there is a boy in your life who needs this. If there's a boy in your life that has come into your mind, it's your responsibility to go out there and figure out how to do this for him as well. I think it's super critical. Fatherhood is not just you and your two boys or whatever. Fatherhood is a posture towards life, and it's an opportunity to go out and provide that to other people. So think about that. You have an opportunity to do this with others. So think about who that might be.
I'm glad you made that point, because it's a lot of fatherlessness around. And so we don't want to leave those guys out at all.
Yeah,
if anybody needs this, it's certainly going to be those young guys. As far as what I would say to fathers about rite of passage, it's not something that has been passed on to us. So it's new to all of us in our Western culture. It's not new to the world. Most cultures actually do have some mechanism to move from being boy to being man. And this is one that changed over the years, but it now works. And it's not just us. We've taken other men and their sons and shown them how to do it. And it's working with everybody. So this is a place to start. This thing that we've put together, it gives the big pieces. It gives you the framework to develop your own, or you can follow lockstep with what we've prescribed here, what we did, but it leaves room for you to make your own version. But you've got the important pieces are in there, and it's important to have the right pieces in there, because all rites of passage across the world have certain components. There's three or four things they all have.
Will you share those four components? What are those components?
Most rites of passage have three. We have four. The most of them have an invitation where come away with me and be a man. So there's an invitation. There's a time called a time of liminality, where they're in limbo. They're not a boy, neither are they a man. They're between the two. And then there's the time of reassimilation or assimilation, where they come back into the community tribe and they plug back in now as this new identity with new expectations on them from the community. So we use the acronym CORE, C-O-R-E. We say this is the core of our manabout, which is our name for the original walkabout. We just borrowed from that, but we're making. And so core is calling. That's the invitation. We call the boy, come away with me. We have orientation, which involves some disorienting and then some reorienting, the liminality time. And then reentry, which is the assimilation. They come back home. And this is a community-wide thing. It's not just you and the boy. There's a community involved in that. I got to tell you, a lot of people leave this out, and it's a mistake. This is powerful for the good of the community, as well as for the young man. Anyway, reentry. And then we added one called ethos. And ethos is the living out of the commitments that were made during the orientation time. The commitments that were made there are now lived out. And so dad and son go forward. We call it discipleship, if you want to call it that. It's making him, leading him into his walk with his faith and into his being a man. And you're together. So it doesn't end after a few days on a trip somewhere. That launches it. And now it's begun and you move forward with this. And there are steps on how to do that. And then after that, it's a lifestyle working together. It's exactly what dads want. And it's exactly what young men want. I want my dad there, not necessarily telling me everything to do, but there for me when I have questions about what to do. It is what we long for. I am not over-exaggerating to tell you I have the best relationship with all my sons and my son-in-law. Took him too, because he's going to have my grandchildren. I wanted him to know this stuff too. So he was 25.
Just the two of you.
He and I, it was the time when I took the neighborhood boy.
Oh, nice.
And I took one of my other sons who had been on the trip. Well, accountability, we had eyes on everything, everything above board. But I led both of them along similar lines at the same
time. Beautiful. Man, what an opportunity. Stephen, thank you so much for the work you're doing. Thank you for not only doing it well in your home, or I should say learning, but everything that you learned, that you were willing to take the time and put it into this beautiful storybook to prescription, to share with us men so that we can do the same for our kids and pass this on and start to have a culture of men who are raising up their boys to be men. My final question for you is a legacy question. And so much of what you shared kind of answers this idea of the legacy that you want to leave. But I just want to fast forward. So say 30 years from now, you're 95 years old, okay? And you are standing in a cul-de-sac, peering into the homes of your grandchildren, not your children, but your grandchildren. What is it that you would see being played out in their homes that would put a smile on your face, a tear in your eye, knowing that you made the most of your time here and you left something behind? What would you see being played out?
Unity, not uniformity. I like the diversity of, I have kids who are in landscaping and some are in real estate and some are teachers. So there's all kinds of diverse things they're involved in. But man, we have one heart. We are for one another and we enjoy one another. We celebrate together. We suffer together. We disagree over some things, but we never disunite. And if I, 95 years old, look out and have grandkids and great grandkids and all of them in harmony or in unity, seeking God's way, living God's ways and seeking His goodness. And they love one another. They are united. Man, I don't know of a better way to live.
Yeah.
I don't.
Unity. I love, like when you said that word, it just hit me in the face. I just love that we can have some disagreements, but we're of one heart in that we love each other. We're for each other. That was the other thing you said, something like that. We're for each other. Stephen, this has been incredible. You've inspired me in so many ways. I started thinking about my daughter's future husbands even, you know, because I really think about my son, but thinking about my daughter's future husbands and the opportunity that I'll have to call them into the Shout family. So much. Stephen, thank you for your work. I know that we'll have future conversations. I love what you're doing. And I especially love, I lean into this a lot, but men like between 30, 40, 50, we are so desperate in need of men like you who can show up and say, oh yeah, I've been married 42 years. I'm 65 years old. I've got 5 kids. I've got 12 grandkids, more on the way. We need you. And many guys your age are just trying to figure out, I'm going to go retire, not realizing that they have the most to offer right now. Right? They have the most to offer because they've lived. So thank you for being willing to share wisdom, which is a life lived.
Thank you. And I appreciate you saying that. And I've so value that you and guys your age and again, 30s and 20s are willing to listen and consider what's been learned to some earned over many years of trial and error, of mistakes and of successes and to apply this so they don't have to go through the same trial and errors that I went through. And it's so important that young men like yourselves are open and listening, searching. And I think a lot of them are. I think there's a new wave of intense interest in those things. And I'm just really glad to see it. I'm really glad to see it.
Love it. Much love to you, your family, blessings, and thank you. I look forward to next time.
Thank you. Bless you.
So Stephen, before I hit end real quick, where can people find you, your book, and learn more about Save the Boys?
Our website is fathermagazine.com and the book is on Amazon. There's actually two, the companion set, Save the Boys with my name, Stephen Meeks. You can look that up and find Save the Boys. And the companion to it is called Men About Field Guide. And they work together. I would say the boys, read that. Then if you really want to take a trip and put it together, the field guide takes step by step, just literally hear the questions, answer these questions, fill in these blanks, and then you're ready to go.
Okay, perfect. And all that information will be in the show notes as well. Thank you, Stephen. Until next time. What an incredible conversation. As I reflect back on all that Stephen and I talked about, the thing that really stuck out to me, the thing that I'm locking into my mind, my heart, my soul is boys take and men give. Now, as I go operate through my day, as you go and operate through your day, are you showing up as a boy or are you showing up as a man? If we can step into moments and go, how would a man show up to this situation? And then we do what a man would do. Before we know it, we're going to look in the mirror and we're going to see a man. My friends, if these conversations are helpful, please write a review. It helps spread the word that fatherhood matters. Thank you to all you dads out there listening to Fatherhood Field Notes podcast. What you do matters. Don't be like everybody else. That's who your kids, spouse, and community needs. This is your guide, Ned Shout. Together, let's rebel against the view that fatherhood has little impact and create lives engaged in mastering the craft of fatherhood. I look forward to hanging out with you next time.